Is your siding looking a little bit dingy? Your fixtures rusty? Are there weeds growing up through the sidewalk? Today, our home improvement expert is here, and we're going to talk about curb appeal. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Bill McAnally is here today, and summer is the time for a million little projects. Today, we'll talk about how to scrub that siding and make it look new again without creating problems down the road. We'll also talk about some of the other small things you can do to make your home look beautiful, or at least better. And Bill will be answering your questions at 866-780-9100. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. There are always a million things to be done around the house, and summer is a great time to take care of all of those outdoor jobs. Today, we're going to talk about curb appeal and all of the little things that you can do to make your house look great. Home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here today. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Charity.
I think one of the first things that we see when we're thinking about this sort of thing is how dingy the siding looks on homes.
That's if you have a curb. Dennis and I were talking about that, neither one of us. And you don't either. You don't have a curb, so we need a different name.
So you want
name.
Ditch appeal?
Ditch appeal, farm field appeal, whatever you want to call it.
Quite have the same ring to it.
Us rural people.
Okay. So roadside appeals, drive-by appeal. But, I think the first thing that a lot of us want to do if we think about washing the siding, we want to take a power washer and just blast the heck out of it.
Well, that's the most fun thing to do.
Right?
Yeah,
I've heard this is not the right approach.
No, unless it's a trained professional, someone that actually knows how to spray very low pressure, basically, onto siding, I wouldn't recommend it. I mean, I like to. But you really have to dial down the pressure because, especially if you have vinyl or steel siding, when you really get up close to it, look on the underside of the siding. So, walk up the wall and look up to the bottom side of it, and you'll see these little holes. And those are just drainage holes, weep holes for any condensation that would ever occur behind the siding. So if you're sitting there with a power washer, you're basically blowing high-pressure water into those holes and saturating what's behind it. And the older the house, the worse it is because we don't know for sure if they took the original siding off and now there's just some wood sheeting or the old wood siding behind there, and you can saturate your walls with water at a very, very quickly because – and we've mentioned it before that even rainwater when there's a 10-mile-an-hour wind, rain will hit siding, and if there's an opening, it'll climb an inch for every 10-mile-an-hour. So we know that a pressure washer is going more than, say, 40 miles an hour, and that just blows that water and just fills up behind the siding. And the other thing sometimes is, there's on a lot of power washer systems, they have different tips. And then there's like a wide, easy kind of a wash, which probably be your best bet. But then some of them are, pretty aggressive. And so you could basically carve your name, into the siding real quick if you don't have the right tip. And so if you're going to use a pressure washer, which we still say you shouldn't, you should aim at a lower pressure downward on the siding, but still, it's still going to blow water behind it.
So what do you do? How do you clean your siding?
You have to go back to actually using muscle and a brush and maybe, they make these really nice wand brushes that attach to your hose that you can reach up 12 feet. It's just going to take some muscle rather than using the Tim Allen spray everything off. It's just going to take a little bit more, and you're going to end up with actually a better wash anyway, because if you've ever pressure washed before, especially if you do your deck or your driveway, you'll notice these lines where like the overlap lines. So you'll even notice that on your siding, and if your siding's getting older, it becomes brittle. And sometimes if you ramp up that pressure real high in a pressure washer, you can actually crack the siding and blow some holes in it. And the other thing is when you come to the windows, as you're spraying, you can actually drive a lot of water into the into the windows itself. You can drive water behind the caulking where it's going to take maybe months for it to dry out. You may be blowing caulking out. You know, some people will use pressure washers to blow the paint off so they can repaint. It takes a long time for that wood siding to dry out so that you can come back and paint it as well.
So, okay, if we're going to do this the right way, we're going to use a soft brush to clean the siding. Do we want to start at the top? Do we want to start
yes.
at the bottom?
Well, you start at the top so that everything as you drain goes down. And, you know, it's like when you clean the windshield on your car. If you, you know, run that brush across it and let it soak for a little bit, you know, all the residue from the bugs and everything, it softens up and it comes off. It's the same thing as on the siding. You know, some of the attachments that come to a garden hose, you're still looking at 100, you know, maybe 100 pounds per square inch pressure. So you still get really good pressure and you get a very nice even clean because you can see it as you go. And then everything that will drain down the siding and you can control things a lot easier. You can get into areas and really get a good scrub rather than holding that pressure washer just for a second, maybe too long and then causing some issues.
I've seen it said that you should wash on a cloudy day or in the shade.
Yeah, it's like a car. It's just you don't have the basically like a water stain.
Okay,
is what
you
happens.
You don't
yeah.
want it to dry too quickly.
Right, right. Yep.
All right. So once you have the siding all taken care
yeah.
of, there are a few other things around your house that may not look so great.
There is. You know, it's just a you know a general cleanup. Like get rid of the old Chevy truck sitting up behind or something. You know, you really what you want to
do. Does that make a property not
well,
look good?
You know,
if you have a rusty
truck? To me, that's a plus. I mean, I'm thinking I like this guy. If there's two, I like him even better. But they'd have to be Dodges. So, but anyway, you really want to walk out, say, in the road. You know, and don't drive, but just come walking. And what's the first thing that you would see? A lot of times, it's, you know, if you have a street mailbox, you know, here's this maybe the mailman hit it, clipped it a couple times with a plow truck or something. Get that first. And if you do live in town, you know, clean that area up around the mailbox and clean right where the curb and the grass meets. I mean, when you drive up and you see if it's a house that's I guess conducive to manicured look, because if you have more rustic house, maybe you know plan things a little different. But really, you want some nice fine lines where the curb is, where the driveway, where the sidewalk is. When people come up and they see sharp lines like along that sidewalk, where you've maybe taken a trimmer and just really manicured, like going to get a haircut, they really trim this really nice. And like we're talking earlier is. Don't just spray weeds in your driveway or your sidewalk. Pull them out so it's clean. Nothing looks worse than, okay, I've hit some Roundup because you didn't want to bend over and pull them out, and then they're brown. That looks even worse. And if you have a lot of shrubs or trees around, take a look and get all that junk out from underneath, the old leaves, and maybe just put some new fresh mulch in it. It looks like you've just planted this whole shrub if you go out and get some, you know, like some cypress or like the golden colored mulch. It looks beautiful. Last weekend I helped help my kids with, they had some retaining stone around some maple trees. And those maple trees, you know, set the roots out. And so all of the retaining stones were all crooked because of the roots. So all we did was pull them out, reset them so they're all nice and level. And it's amazing when you drive up how clean and crisp it looks now because everything's level and it has, you know, an inch of new mulch on the inside.
So a little job can make a big difference.
That first thing, and it's kind of funny. I remember when we were still building a lot at the college, kids did some research and they found out that if you have, an asphalt or blacktop driveway, and it actually made the house look more crisp. And people had their eyes on the house before they did the driveway because concrete was a different light, like a lighter color. I never really understood that, but there was a study that showed if your driveway was a little darker, your eyes went to the house first, and then the driveway didn't overtake your view of what the lot was.
Hmm.
So I know some people have like come and acid etched or stained their driveways to kind of give it a little better look, so it's not blotchy. And if there are cracks in that driveway, you know, caulk them in. Show that there's some maintenance.
How about with your deck or your porch? What do you need to be thinking about?
Well, they need to be cleaned. And if there's any loose boards, tighten them down. You know, if the handrails are loose or crooked. Because let's say let's say you've hired a friend to come over and look at the house if you're trying to sell it or anything. And the first thing, anybody that has any carpentry experience, they're just going to stand there and use their eye and look to see if things are crooked. If things are crooked, it means that there hasn't been a whole lot of maintenance or the person that did it didn't really care. So they're going to look at handrails and posts. They use their eye and line it up against something else that's straight, like the edge of a garage or a house. And they're going to see if they're crooked. And then, or say the garage door, like you got a big double wide garage door, is the header, the beam that goes across the garage door, is that dip? I mean, to me, when I drive up and I see a house that has that, okay, I know it was probably built in the 70s because we didn't know better, so we always use the wrong wood. And so it's, so you're going to have to rebuild it or straighten it out or replace it. Like on garage doors, if the kids knocked out the glass with a basketball, replace that kind of stuff.
Oh, does that look bad, too? That's interesting.
See, there again, it means the kids are active. It depends how you look at it.
Depends on what you're really trying to say.
Yep.
So if you have a loose board on your deck or on your porch, mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes, of course, you can tighten that down. Sometimes there's a little more going on there. What do you need to do to analyze that?
Sometimes that's really a judgment call sometimes, because it depends on how you've stained the deck, what kind of wood it is, how long it's been there. And because nothing looks worse than going out and getting a brand new board and then you throw it down on the deck and everything else is weathered and you try to match the color and wow. I mean, everybody notices it. What's wrong with your deck? That's the first thing. What happened to your deck? I said, well, I just replaced the board. No, there's something's wrong. So you may have to maybe think about, restaining the whole deck. And really, washing it is okay. But
I thought we were going to talk about small jobs that can make a big difference.
But,
that doesn't sound like a small job at all.
Well, you brought up the decks. It wasn't me. So, that's the thing is even this little cleanup, it kind of can come in. When you start cleaning up, sometimes that's the best time to move into the maintenance. Because when you're cleaning up, you're kind of going slow and it's kind of, it's kind of relaxing. You're just cleaning all of a sudden, I see this little hole maybe I have to caulk up or something like that. But, the decks sometimes, they're nice to have, but they are really heavy on the maintenance. And if you really want to – luckily, they're out back usually, so it's not the first thing you see from the curb. But the gutters and downspouts too, if they're loose, straighten them up and don't just hammer them back. Make them look very, very clean and crisp. That's kind of the big thing. If it's clean and crisp and straight lines, that's a good look.
I'm talking with home improvement expert Bill McAnally today. We're talking about curb appeal right now, all the little jobs that pile up through the winter months that you need to take care of during the summertime. If you'd like to ask questions, you can give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Bill will answer questions about any of the home improvement jobs you're considering or in the middle of right now. Give us a call. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, ready to answer your questions about any of the home improvement projects you're working on right now or you're contemplating. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. That number again, 866-780-9100. And here's a question from Jeff in Cedar Rapids. He says, should I be covering my air conditioning unit during the winter months?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, you should, because for one thing, it helps the painted surface. So we're looking for something that looks clean, and it keeps out any critters or blown in leaves or sticks. And then if you have a maintenance program with a heating and cooling professional, it's a lot easier for them to stay up on it. One thing you do want to check as well is make sure that the pad that the air conditioning system sits on outside, that condenser sits on, make sure that that's level. So you may have to, readjust the soil underneath so that it does sit level, because that's another thing. When people drive up, they see that sitting crooked. Some are like the old steps that went into houses. They kind of settled towards the house. Those two are just something that really catches a lot of people's eyes.
But the simple answer is yes, you should cover it and only take a couple of minutes.
It, you know, and for maintenance and for longevity of the unit, it's amazing to keeping that thing from having all the snow and the wind and the elements working on nothing, you know, all the mechanical that, you know, most of it's hidden, but still, you know, having that stuff in there doesn't help it at all.
Here's a question from somebody who lives in a zero lot house where two houses share the same adjoining wall. With curb appeal, there are issues when the other's house appearance may drag down the appearance of your home with a shared roof, a shared sidewalk space. You have any recommendations for that?
You know, that's where I would really have a really hard time having someone that maybe didn't have the same amount of pride as you did, or someone having the pride and having me next to him, maybe, I guess, is a better way to put it. You know, it's really hard. Maybe in some areas, there are some covenants, you know, maybe not so much the local covenants, but in some communities, they do have covenants that you have to keep a certain look and a certain, basically a certain curb appeal to your residents. And so, you know, sometimes I know people will go to, you know, the city. That's kind of maybe the wrong way to do it. But the first thing I do is just talk to them. I said, you know, is there any way, you know, maybe we can make our houses look a little, because it's going to help both of us.
Right. And, well, let's say you have a problem with your roof, though. Is there a way to fix half a roof to put new shingles on?
No. I mean, it's not. A lot of times, hopefully, the zero lots, a lot of times the roofs are a little bit separate, or they, you know, shed to their own area. And that's kind of sometimes why people shy away from living in those situations, or like living in a subdivision that has a lot of requirements, or you have shared wells or shared septic or shared driveway, is hopefully the people you're working with are easy to work with. If they're not, it can be a nightmare, and then that just kind of takes over your whole life, is worrying about it and arguing. You know, I would just kind of approach them, say, you know, if you need some help, maybe if you're financially you know, maybe I can chip in and help paint, maybe do it together, build some camaraderie. But sometimes people have, maybe it's a valid point, as, you know, I fix it up, my property taxes go up. Now, I'm not trying to sell, you know, and I could care less. You know, they have that attitude. I would rather have it look good, and, you know, but hopefully you may just approach them face to face first, and maybe they're willing to. Maybe they can't.
Try to create some good relationships.
Yeah. That, you know, have a good neighborhood relationship. That's, you know, and that's a lot of times, you know, those the zero lots and the old bungalow, you know, neighborhoods. You had a lot of neighborhood camaraderie, and everybody helped each other. It's kind of like when a farmer gets hurt, and the neighbors come in and help plant. You get that camaraderie going, and they may want to, and they may just start fixing up the whole neighborhood. Everybody, you know, gathers together.
Susan is on the line from Norwalk at 866-780-9100. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Bill. Susan Webster.
Oh, hi, Sue. How are you? Good to hear from you.
Yeah, this is always my favorite topic. A couple things to think about. I think a lot of the real estate websites, like the National Association of Realtors, have calculations regionally about what the payback is for different fix-ups.
Good.
And deferred maintenance, of course, is a good payback, because the curb appeal really does make a difference.
Sure.
And the other thing is, in some neighborhoods, there's financing available to help people maintain their homes. Neighborhood finance, and then that loan I've told you about, the 203K.
Yeah. Okay.
Because a lot of times the issue is just, you know, folks can't afford it. It's tough.
Right. And there, in that 203K, isn't that really low interest? Or what is that?
Well, no, it's going to be market rate interest, but people can get an amount at the same interest rate as the first part of the mortgage.
Oh, okay.
So there used to be an old 80-20 loan, but the second was at a much higher rate.
Okay.
So it wasn't very favorable.
Okay.
And then I think FHA's come out with a new refi package that sounds very appealing too, so it's always a good idea to talk to a couple different lenders.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a good idea. I didn't think of that. Thank you.
All right. Mm-hmm. Susan, thanks a lot for your call.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You heard that. She said favorite topic. There you go. See?
All right. John is on the line from Moline, Illinois. Hi, John.
Hi there, and good morning to everybody.
Good morning.
I've got a quick question. I've got a home that was built back in the 30s, and it was made out of primarily concrete, and as a result of the design that was popular during that period, I have a flat roof on my garage. I don't have on the house. I've got a very low slope roof on the home that almost appears flat from the street. But on the garage, I do have a flat roof. And I'm wondering if there's anything I could do to enhance the curb appeal of the home, because I think a lot of people are afraid of flat roofs.
Yeah, they are. That, you know, that's, to me, that would be a huge issue with me.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. I've never understood why in Iowa we ever do flat roofs, because it always seems sooner or later we end up putting a pitch on them anyway. But
that's right.
Yeah, you know, if it was me, it kind of depends on what the shape the roof is on the flat roof now. If it's been brand new or a couple years old, maybe I'd wait a little bit. But I would put a pitched roof on there. You know, I would put like a steel pitched roof on, like you see in a lot of schools, and I'd slope it to the back and then kind of dress the front up a little bit. Maybe you can do some architectural work above the concrete work, to maybe kind of highlight that it's a little bit taller, a little bit false, you know, rise,
sure.
and shed that water to the back
because
that's the first thing I always look at is, man, I know there's going to be upkeep there, and it's
yep.
just such a – and you know exactly what I mean. Iowans, we know that we're going to have an issue with a flat roof.
Well, the irony is I've had the house 33 years now, and I've never had an issue with it. So it's been – honestly.
Yeah, that's
what – And what I was thinking is maybe I can put a deck up there so people don't notice it's a flat roof so much, and they look at it as having more of an entertainment appeal or something functional.
Yeah, you could. Does it have small parapet walls like on the sides?
Yeah. Well, yes, and it's on the river bluff. It's over. Best view from my house is from the top of the garage.
Oh, that's what I would do. Yeah, I like the idea. Yeah, what were you thinking? I'd put that deck on right away.
Or a green roof or something that's fairly popular anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that would overlook or hide the fact that you've really got a flat roof underneath it. So.
Well, it sort of would, but I really like the idea of the deck. If it's structurally fit, you could put a false deck above it, and if I had a view, that would be a big highlight.
And if you need help,
you've got my number here.
Okay. Well, thanks. Just hearing you say that will convince my wife, and that's the real help.
Ooh,
I need,
okay.
So.
All right.
But thanks for your time.
Yeah, but thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, John. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. We've got a couple of lines open for you right now. And here's a question from Bob in Muscatine. He said, I'd like to know where to get a brush for washing siding. All I can find are 10 to 12 inches wide, and it takes a long time to wash a house with a small brush.
Yeah, you may have to go to a commercial cleaning, like a janitorial supply. Where people that work, like say in the school systems where they buy the equipment, and you may be able to find them even though they're a high pressure washer, salespeople, but you may be able to find them in, like say, Northern Hydraulics. They sell an awful lot of cleaning stuff, but I would stop at a janitorial, a commercial janitorial supply first, because they have a lot of that. You know, they're paying people by the hour, and they don't want a little brush either when they're doing big work. And some of the same brushes that they use on large windows and same equipment is the same thing you would use on vinyl or steel, because that it holds up good to weather and everything, but some of those pieces, you start jostling around, they may come loose. So you've got to be kind of careful so you can't use something super big that you're going to knock the siding loose. Good
and
question.
He also shares a little tip. He said that he's been told to wet the lower part of the house when washing to avoid streaking.
Yes. Yeah.
So
yeah.
The dirt floats right down the siding. And he has a second question as
okay.
well. He says, I have a patio that has become lower close to the house. Is mud jacking the primary resolution to raising the level so water drains away from the house?
It is, or cut, if it's a concrete patio, you can just cut the concrete and then, fill that soil back in and then re-pour another section, or you use something else like another brick. I have seen people, it's kind of neat, they've been pretty, some ingenuity there is they've replaced maybe a foot and a half next to the house with brick, and then they just kind of continue it and go around the other three sides of the patio with the brick, and it kind of has that brick concrete look, and it looked pretty sharp, and it was amazing how now nobody asks why is the brick there, now it's part of the design.
The number to call is 866-780-9100. Anne is on the line from St. Louis, Missouri. Hello, Anne.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, we live in an 80-year-old house. It has a brick foundation, and the basement is, you know, finished into a family room. When it rains really heavily, we get water in two areas, on the floor by the fireplace, and then in the front of the house, there's, you know, a front porch and then dirt landscaping off to the side, and we're getting water pretty heavily there.
Okay.
And so before we rip off our porch and have to, you know, any other ideas?
Well, and is, if you can shed, you know, we try to have 6 inches of 6 inches of fall. So like the in the first 10 feet away from the house. So, you know, it's 6 inches lower, 10 feet away from the house. And I don't know if you can do something like that to help shed the water away. But, you know, sometimes on an 80-year-old home, if there was some old drainage tile at the time, you know, you could be getting problems, you know, with that it's plugged. Some of the 80-year-old houses had cisterns. I mean, it doesn't – you wouldn't think some houses are still that young. But some had cisterns, and it may be that it's collecting water still and causing the water come into the basement as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about French drains? I mean, we keep hearing about those.
Yeah, if you could put a French drain system in, that may cure everything. And if you've done some research on them, if you have a place for that water to go from the French drain system, that works very well. Try not to have any, say, like a, you know, a little rain garden or anything within 50 feet of the basement. Sometimes people get them too close, and then that water would come into the basement too.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right, well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Ann.
Thanks a lot for your call, Ann. And you can call us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And it's the day for questions from Bob's. This one is from Bob in Ames. He says, my son and his wife are replacing carpet in a home they recently bought. The subfloor is plywood. There are some spots that have cat urine damage. Short of replacing parts of the subfloor, are there treatments they can do to take care of the smell? They have been told it could be coated with kills. Would this work? If so, how many coats would you put down? I've heard people say that on really humid days, this might be a problem even after the kills.
Yes, because it can still come out the bottom of the plywood. And and there's another thing about plywood is it is made with layers. And, you know, when it's constructed, think of like a paper, you know, roll of paper towels. That's basically how they take a tree and then you just kind of roll the veneers out. Well, it's all these veneers stacked on top of each other. So it can also kind of plume out to the sides. You may see the urine stain on the top and it may be huge on the second layer. To me, I hate to say it, but I don't like just covering those up. I would cut that out on the urine stains. And people, I know 90% are going to disagree with me, but there's that one time that, and because that smell just bugs me. I mean, I would cut that out and do that, because there's nothing worse than everybody sitting around and it's, let's say it does get warm in there and all of a sudden it stinks and it, yeah, that's just me. So take it for what it's worth. Yes,
issue.
There's nothing worse than that.
Yeah. You can call and join our conversation at 866-780-9100. We have a couple of people who wanted to talk about the air conditioning unit question that we had earlier. Ron from West Des Moines wanted to clarify that if you do cover the AC, you should make sure not to cover the heat pump.
Yeah. Okay.
And
good
then
point.
Dan in Albion says, about leveling the AC unit, we discovered expensively that if the unit isn't level, it can put stress on the compression fitting, causing a leak of the coolant. Just another reason to keep that unit level.
That's, you know, that's a really good point. That's the best point. That's the best reason to have to do that, because.
But how do you do it? If you've got a little cement pad that's leaning, how do you level,
you know,
it up?
It's surprising. Those things are very light. I mean, people look at them, you think it weighs half as much as a car. They're very, very light. You just get a couple. You can get a couple people with, and you dig along the sides of this pad. Most of them are plastic now anyway. They're not concrete. But if you just get a couple, like 4x4 posts, you dig underneath, like two sides, shove it underneath and just pry it up with plain old leverage, a little bit of time, and then shove some rock underneath it. Don't use dirt, use rock. And just keep shoving the rock underneath it with a shovel. They call it cribbing. and put that underneath till you get it level. The thing is, though, you do want to keep watching those fittings because they may be under stress, and just even moving them upwards now, you could cause that problem. So before you do that, you may want to, you know, if you have any questions at all about that about that line there, is to, you know, have the air conditioning guy maybe there with you at the same air conditioning person there with you at the same time. Because that's a very good point, and that it can happen very, very slowly because, you know, it's just kind of settling down. But yeah, that's a good point.
The when Bob from Muscatine sent us the email earlier, he used the term mudjacking.
Mudjacking is when you can drill some holes through the concrete, and then they kind of blow a cementitious type product underneath it under pressure, and it actually just lifts the concrete slab. It depends on the size. Sometimes you can bring it in from the edges and do it. It's amazing. That's how they sometimes straighten these huge silos. If they've started to tilt, is they will mud jack that whole base, and they can re-level a huge silo. It's really a neat process. Sometimes it can be expensive, especially if it's a little job. It may seem real expensive to you.
You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. We're going to take a short break, then we'll be back to answer your questions. Home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here today. Again, that number is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here with me today. And you can join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we do have a few lines open right now, so you can get your calls in. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Julie is on the line from Olwine. Hi, Julie.
Hi, I really appreciate this program and really appreciate the expertise Bill is offering.
Ooh.
I have.
Thank you.
Oh, I appreciate it. We have a 112-year-old Victorian house, slate roof, and the metal gutters were all rusted out. So when painting the house this year, had somebody take down the gutters, called another gutter replacement place to come out. They won't touch it because the angle is such that there's not a soffit underneath that's perpendicular to the house. I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah.
So is there any way to attach gutters these days?
You know, most of them didn't have – they had the strap-type gutters, and maybe the gutter company you called only did, like, seamless style.
Yes.
You're going to have to get with more of a commercial – gutter, somebody that's maybe works in larger cities because they're more familiar with working with the old Victorians and that. It was usually like a semicircle, gutter.
Yes.
And then it had the straps. And the mm-hmm. other thing is I'd be really nervous, too, working around slate. So you have to have somebody that has experience working around slate and installing those gutters. Are you thinking of going with copper to kind of keep with the same theme, or are you going to go with galvanized or –
it would have to depend on the cost, but
they're pricey.
You know, I'd be willing to look at either.
Yeah, they're pricey, I know, but you know, if you can find the funds, nothing looks better. I mean, it adds so much, I think, to mm-hmm. an older Victorian mm-hmm. with the copper. It just, especially with slate, you know, that just looks so sharp.
Small rural Iowa, probably have to go to a larger city, you're saying.
Yeah, you know, because it's an art. I mean, and most companies don't have the equipment or the experience because there's not that many of them around anymore. So, you may have to, you can, I think Des Moines, maybe Mason City, maybe Ames might even have some. But, you're going to have to find somebody that does it commercially.
Well, Dubuque is close to us, and they have a lot of Victorians, so maybe that's the way to go.
Dubuque should be a hot spot because they've been fixing these. You're right. Dubuque, for you, that Dubuque would be one.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks a lot for your call, Julie. You can call us at 866-780-9100. This is a question from Matthew. He says, I have a deck on the front of my house that I stained red a few years ago. It's starting to fade. I would like to paint it white. What's your thought on looks, value, and upkeep and such? The house is yellow with green shutters.
Well, you know, paint, the one thing about paint, it depends on what kind of stain you have and how well it's going to adhere. Paint may flake off faster. You may want to go with maybe a heavy-bodied type of a stain instead that, you know, I would think maybe a brown. I'm not good at colors, so help me out on this, Charity, if that sounds good or not. But you maybe go with the kind of a go with a heavy-bodied stain instead of the paint, because I've seen too many decks where they've painted and and the conditions haven't been just right, and then you have these huge flakes and you're doing it every year. You know, I would find the color that's the color that matches that color scheme. And, you know, I would think something like a brown would tie very good in with the red and, you know, just kind of make it more what you would expect to see, more of a cedar tone, I think. But
it seems like white would be really hard to keep up when it's something you're walking over all the time.
And what makes it hard, too, as well, and that's a good point, because when you're walking on it, most of the whites – it's hard to get a good color white that walk on that isn't slick. And, you know, because a lot of painted surfaces, as hard as they try, unless you put the, you know, a sand additive to it to give grit for the top of the decking, the white paint is just really slick. And then you get maybe, you know, that a little bit of ice on it as well. That's paint is just so hard in that application. So I would go with a stain instead.
We've been talking a lot about making cement pads level, and you did mention some of the wonky woodwork that you can
sure.
get on a deck. How about, you know, you have a saggy...
Wonky woodwork, okay.
That's what I'm calling it. A saggy big front porch on an old farmhouse. Is that something that you need to try to tackle?
Yeah, and it really isn't that hard. There's a lot of stuff that you can research on renovating, you know, older homes. But those old porches, most of them were angled anyway. So don't try to level that whole floor up. But most of them had like a 2 to 4 inch slope, with the boards running towards you. As you look at the porch, the boards were running towards you, not across. They were usually like a southern yellow pine flooring or fir. But, yeah, you want to go ahead and try to brace those up. But there again, do it very slowly. You want to look at what kind of footings or concrete block columns. That's what a lot of them had underneath them. Have a starting point, put in new footings, and start at the very bottom and start raising it up. And because as you do that, there's usually that connection where the roof meets the house, that if you don't do it very slow or keep your eye on it, you know, you can cause some failures in there, because over a period of time that wood is as like bent, and it may have some arches in it, and you're not going to fight an arch. So it may come to the point where you look at it, I'm just going to have to start all over. It isn't that hard to do it if you do it slowly. Like we've said before, like jacking up a house and from the inside to re-level a little bit, you've got to go very slow.
Well, earlier you were talking about if you have a rustic look, then, you know, don't make your lawn completely manicured. Now, if you have a rustic look, maybe the porch can be saggy. Is that
well, I guess you're confused with that. Maybe you don't know the meaning of that
right.
word.
No, I think I'll just take it as that.
No, it's not redneck. It's rustic.
Steve sent this email from Dubuque. And if you want to join our conversation, we still have time to take a couple more calls before the end of the hour. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Steve from Dubuque says, many people use toxic liquids in keeping yard and sidewalks clean of plant growth. I'm from New England, but have lived in Iowa for some years. Back home, we're not so focused on mm-hmm. mowing and removal of natural growth. There are many English-type gardens and mm-hmm. wildflower lawns. We also don't mow our interstate highway areas. To make my house ready to sell, do I have to get rid of the wildflowers and natural lawn?
No, it just, you know, you just have to realize that you maybe have cut down on the number of people that may be interested in the property. I don't like chemicals either. I figure my Creeping Charlie looks just as good as any other grass. You kind of squint and all looks green. I don't like the chemicals either. And I was at a house yesterday in Cedar Falls that had very little manicured areas. I mean, very, very small, maybe 10, not even 10%, but the rest of it was wildflowers and shrubberies. And you had this pathway going to the back of the house, and it, you know, was so quiet and cool because you're in the trees. But some people, they see one dandelion in 10 acres and they just go nuts, you know. So you just have to realize that you may lower the target population that's going to like your area.
But the right buyer may just love it.
The right buyer, that's what they're looking for, because what's really irritating sometimes when you buy a lot, okay, I'm paying $40,000 for this bare piece of ground. What is that tree worth to me? And what are these bushes worth to me? And so if you want to, you know, do I want a house stuck out in the middle of nowhere? Or do I want something that fits in with nature and having all the, you know, like say English gardens are very manicured usually, but having all the wildlife and everything, that's like, to me, that's a big plus. But there again, it just depends on what your target is.
All right. Denise is on the line next from Atlantic. Hi, Denise.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to segue into from the porch, the old 100-year-old house with the wraparound porch.
Uh-huh.
We've done all the stuff of the foundation. We've got all that done. What issue we're having is paint adhering to the floor. Now, we've replaced the floor, so it's treated lumber. And we have gone through this every year for the past few years. The primer, we've done everything to the book. And the primer, we just did it the other day with a real expensive primer, and it peeled in that rain. We were lucky to have a rain the other night, and it peeled. And so we're just very frustrated. Can you recommend anything?
You know, that's kind of strange that everything's coming loose.
It is.
Is there moisture getting into the wood from underneath? Is it really damp underneath that the boards are staying damp for any reason?
You know, we hadn't thought about that, but I don't think so. It's a brick foundation under the porch, and it's a roof over it. You know, it's just a standard porch, and I don't think that'd be an issue. But when we put the new flooring on it several years ago, it was very dry under there.
Okay, so it's been down for several years then.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, well, maybe it's too new and the treatment isn't kind of off-gassed out.
No.
Have you, you know, you've obviously talked to the paint people then too, haven't you?
Oh, we're having rounds and rounds of conversation, and I just thought I'd pop it to you,
because
it's real frustrating.
Maybe, have you tried more of an epoxy-type paint?
Let's see.
You probably have a list of all the paints you've gone through. you know, maybe I would, if you have any scrap pieces of that, maybe I would try an epoxy and just see if that works. Maybe if that'll adhere. There's a lot more people out there listening that know a lot more about paint than I do. But if everything else isn't working, then I'd just keep trying to find something. But maybe the epoxy would work. And then you would, you know, since it is kind of slick, you would put the, you know, the granules that come with it so you have some
grip. Exactly. Well, and when you say epoxy, I mean, I think of glue. But you're not. That's not what you're talking about.
No, it's an epoxy paint. Sometimes, like Rust-Oleum makes one that you put like on your garage floors that goes on concrete.
Okay, I see what you're saying. And someone had mentioned maybe we should varnish it first, and then it would stick to the varnish.
Well, now it's kind of late because you've got all these other products on there.
Yeah.
So yeah, you are going to have a little issue now trying to get everything to adhere to what's underneath.
Of course.
And the last thing you want to do is try and sand it. That really make a mess with the treated
lumber.
Well,
we sanded it prior to putting this on.
Oh, my gosh.
It's been a headache.
How long have you been working on this, Denise?
Well, you know, probably for about the last, seriously, for the last 3 years.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well.
And we're just real frustrated with, we've used real expensive stuff, and we use. You know, treated lumber. I mean, it's the one part of our porch that's just really disappointing to us.
Did you ever try just an oil finish, like something like Sikkens, Sikkens? Did you ever try anything like that?
No, that isn't something. Sikkens.
Yeah, there's other brands, but that's just one coming to mind. You may want to take a piece of that, and then now that you know these other ones don't work, you may have to go to the other ends of the spectrum and look at an oil type, and then go to the other end and maybe putting an epoxy over the top if it's going to adhere.
Okay.
I'd try those two ends of the spectrum now since you've tried everything in between.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot for your call, Denise.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. 866-780-9100. Jim is on the line in Spencer. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Well, you know, I've been dealing with a lot of those same issues with paint for some time, and the best success I've had is, you know, I get everything off that I possibly can, and then I use boiled linseed oil, and I thin it out with turpentine so that it strikes in really good.
Yeah.
And then I go over that with a linseed oil primer, and it really attaches. I mean, you can't wait very long. You want to put it on within, like, you know, a week or two right away, because the linseed oil is going to be real gummy.
Yeah.
Well, not real gummy, but it's going to have a tack to it. So when you put that primer coat on there, it really adheres beautifully. And I did that with my house. Cedar siding is about 100-year-old siding, and that's been on there for over 20 years.
Yeah, and that oil type finish like that is, when it's finished like that, it's a good look, and it brings out the grain. You know, with hers, I didn't really know if she's looking for more brightness as well, since it's a porch floor. But no, that's a good point. Thanks, Jim. And I like the look of that oil. That's kind of what I was thinking about. That's pretty.
Well, I'm amazed at how long that held up, and I don't know if you can still find the same product I was using. I haven't had to do it for a while.
Well, I hope they still have it.
Diamond Vogel was the product I used, and I trust their stuff.
Okay. All right.
Thanks a lot for your call, Jim. Mm-hmm. Here's an email from Alex. How do you go about installing an in-ground fire pit?
Oh, an in-ground fire pit?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it kind of depends on how large you want it to be, but you do want to put a lot of drainage underneath it. So you want to have, let's say, like a foot of clean gravel underneath the fire pit, and try to keep maybe a foot of clean gravel and white gravel, like pea rock or limestone, around it, so the water stays away, and so the bricks, you know, can stay dry on your fire pit. And I know some people put a small pipe in. For drainage at the very bottom, and then some will also put a small, basically like a fresh air return, but a supply, so bring in air, so that once this fire gets going, since it's down a pit, sometimes people like to have the bigger blaze right away so they can get some air for the combustion. They'll bring it in through a small pipe. Mm. The big thing is, though, is to make sure that you've got drainage for everything around it. Otherwise, the frost is just going to keep moving this thing all over the place.
All right, let's try to fit in one more call before the end of the hour. Randy from North Liberty. Hi, Randy.
Hello. Jim, I'm looking at putting a commercial metal roof over my existing roof. One contractor puts down one by fours and attaches it to those.
Okay.
The other contractor just screws it right to the roof.
Okay.
Can you give me some pros and cons, or which is the best?
Well, the best is to take, if you can possibly do it, take the old roof off first, because then you can see if there's any structural issues going on, and that the 1x4s that you're nailing down are actually going into some wood that it's capable of holding your attachments. It really depends on the type of steel, because some are hidden fasteners, some aren't. And it really doesn't matter if you're putting down 1x4s or if you're going into the other roof. But the 1x4s is a lot better system. And I know some people now are, instead of running the 1x4s perpendicular to the roofing, they're actually running it at a slight angle, so that any water that ever gets through the metal, then instead of going down the roof and then hitting the 1x4, actually follows the path of the 1x4 and comes out the bottom.
All right. Randy, thanks a lot for
call.
And Bill McAnally, thank you.
Well, thank you, Charity.
Home improvement expert Bill McAnally. He'll be back next month. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. You can email us, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, Horticulture Day, and Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis will be here with us. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.